Hello and welcome to episode 40 of the Book Wars podcast. I don't know why you guys are still here, but thanks for being here. Today we are discussing, well, 40 episodes seems like a lot.
Okay, 40 episodes is a lot, but also you're just like, this is a thing we're doing and I guess people listen to it for some fucking reason.
Well, I mean, we say that every week.
Joke's on you guys.
We're discussing from chapter 29 to the end of Phasma, aka where everybody was really confused that there was still so much of the book left after they got off Parnassos, and this is all the fuck shit that happened after that and before that, because flashbacks
shit.
And stuff. But before we get into the thing, what are you guys drinking?
I am drinking the last of my Eagle Rare bourbon. So pouring a little out for that bottle into
was
my
that,
glass.
Is that what was it. In the decanter?
No, it was not in the decanter. Oh. The decanter is Lagavulin scotch, which was great. No, but I decided to go with bourbon because I cooked myself a steak and asparagus for dinner, and it was delicious, and I just decided to be more American, because why the fuck not?
America.
Because America sucks.
Besides the obvious.
Yeah. Well, you guys have off tomorrow, too, so that's
good. That's also true.
You should be 100% doing that.
Being American? Yes, indeed.
Yep.
President's Day.
I just meant drinking and eating steak. That's
President's Day, the holiday for people who did nothing except be born.
Yeah.
It really is a quintessential American holiday,
isn't
it?
I am drinking. Wait. I get to do it this time.
You drinking?
Wait,
can you hear me?
Wait for it. Hello. All right. Sorry, I've always wanted to do that, but we never have cans. I am drinking Anderson Valley. It is called, this is the best name I've ever heard for a beer. The Kimmy, the Yink, and the Holy Ghost Ale.
Ooh. So it's a Gosa.
Yes, correct. Because I love sex.
Or inaccurately named. You decide.
No.
I don't actually know what this means. It's probably some pop culture reference that I just don't get because it's
I don't
me.
Get it either.
Okay, great.
Tweet at us.
I mean, Anderson Valley's in the middle of nowhere, so.
Is it Virginia?
No, it's California.
Yep.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, that explains why it sounds vaguely familiar.
It is in the foothills of the Lake Tahoe, Sierra Nevada's area.
Oh, okay. I have had their beer, I think.
So
I
what?
Probably
ask California.
Once or twice.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. It is yet another beer event weekend in Portland. Yesterday was, yesterday and today actually, are Zwicklemania. Which basically, so this is the 10th year that they've done it. It's basically like free brewery tours kind of all day.
Ooh.
At like all the participating breweries. So we hit up a couple of those kind of impromptu yesterday. And why they call it Zwicklemania is because they do tastings off the Zwickle, which is basically like when it's in the fermentation tank. So most of the beer is not done yet, like because the beer process, you know, it goes, they do the hot part first where they add the malt and the hops and blah, blah, blah. And then it goes into the fermentation tank with the yeasties. And then they put them in these other tanks for like all that stuff to settle out. So this is like when it's in the middle process. So they let you try stuff off the Zwickle. So I have no idea. Portland is so fucking extra, but it's great. And you get a lot of free, you end up getting a lot of free beer. So
nice.
Cool.
But I'm drinking one of those breweries that we went to yesterday. I'm drinking Bearlick Brewing Company out of Portland, Oregon. And I am drinking a New Noise. It comes in at 6.4%. And let me taste it. I don't even remember what it is. It's an IPA. It's good. I'm not surprised. I think because we were just on the way out there yesterday, and I was like, give me a crowler. So I got another crowler of something good.
Nice.
Awesome. I didn't even know that you could try things in the middle of the fermentation process and it would taste like anything besides like ass, you know?
Yeah, no, it actually, I mean, like, it just tastes like under, like, it's pretty flat, right? Because, like, sure. That's part of the carbonating process. And it has, like, kind of like a like these brighter flavors that, because, like, it's got so a lot more sugar still left in it for the yeast to eat. So it's kind of, like, more juice-like almost. But you still get, like, a lot of the flavors that you'll end up getting in the beer. It's a really interesting, like, time to try it. During the process, because you know, once you, like, I think brewers do it a lot because it ends up, you know, they can tell the difference in taste a lot more kind of before it's fermented.
Right, definitely.
It could just be, like, you know what I mean? Because it's got so much, you know, else going on before the yeasties get their little yeast hands on it. Yeast.
Yes. I mean,
this is yeast pod.
Yes, obviously.
Oh, God.
Ew. Ah, all kinds of yeast. Well. All
right. That's the end of beer talk. We're done.
No, but honestly, no, that actually makes sense to me. I'll let you explain it because, yeah. As people might know, I make my own kombucha because I'm a disgusting millennial. And
no, you're not disgusting. It saves so much money.
It does.
It's so expensive to buy in the store.
Really is. But yeah, no. Honestly, like, when I was taught how to make it, they were just basically like, yeah, just honestly, if you don't know what the fuck you're doing, just taste it at various times. Yep. Until it tastes like something you would drink.
Yep, totally. So. Well, and obviously, like, you just add juice to it. So, like,
right.
That's so. All it is.
Yep.
It's same with beer. It's like the pre, or like, you know, before grape juice turns into wine.
Right, right.
It's cool. Just juice. So. Nice. But cool. Yeah. Right. So that was the 10th anniversary. They do it here, and then I think they do it in Bend, because that's the other place that has, like, all the breweries around Portland. So I think the Bend one is next weekend. Cool. But, yeah, I know. We have no reason to have all these beer events. But they're like, we're like, it's February. We have to do this other thing. Here's another beer event. I'm like, okay.
Keep them happy with more beer.
No, I know. I'm like, okay, fine. Let's do more beer events. You're right.
Oh no.
So there was all kinds of shit that happened at the end of the book here. Wasn't there? I think Kate wanted to talk about the kicker.
Yes, I'm just gonna. I just getting right to the point here at the top of the episode. After
the top of Yeast Pod.
After hashtag Yeast Talk. so. it's just delicious. All right. Vi, of course, saves her best story for last as she's telling Cardinal about Phasma's past. And she goes even farther back in time to before. Hux's ship landed before Phasma and Keldo were the leaders of the Sire, all the way back to when they weren't even members of the Sire, and she tells the lovely, lovely, beautiful story of how Phasma chopped off her brother's leg and got her family all murdered and then put their ooey-gooey gut things on her face with the salve and stuff, and that... God, at the point where I was reading that, I'm still recovering from surgery, so, you know, I have no bedtime. Not that I have a bedtime normally, because I don't care. As Chris looks at me knowingly. He's just shaking his head at me. but anyway, I was like, it was like 8:00 at night, and I was reading this, and I got to this point of the book at 3:00 a.m, and then, like, I get to, like, the last line of the chapter where it's like, welcome to the Sire, and I was just like, gotta go to bed now. I really gotta go to bed now. But oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah. I was just like, oh fuck. Anyway, so just based on that, Vi tells Cardinal that this is a story that really cements who Phasma is, even more so than telling her long tale about you know, wandering for 40 days in the desert or wherever the hell. So guys, who is Phasma, and has anything changed about her since she and Keldo were kids?
I think Phasma is Phasma. I think she is, to use Kristen's term that she put on the outline last episode, I can't remember who actually said it, but unapologetically herself. Like, I think she was basically born a psychopath.
Damn.
And this was how it manifested, by attaching herself to the strongest people and in whatever by whatever means necessary. And that's what she did her entire life. And that's how she ended up with the First Order.
Totally. I mean, I'm asking you this question because I can't remember which of you asked it last episode, but we were debating whether Phasma actually changes throughout the course of this novel, like how much character development we get out of her. And it seems like no.
Yeah, I think that's I definitely argued like none. And I think that's probably why, because I had read a little bit further than you guys at that time. But yeah, I mean, all I wrote on the outline for this point was this is why I was freaking out last episode.
Right.
Because we were like doing all this like Keldo and Phasma talk, and you guys had all these like cool theories, and I was like, oh, they don't know that he is disabled because she just fucking chopped his leg off because she's crazy. And like, that's literally it. And it's fucking crazy. This book is crazy.
Yes. Holy, holy shit.
Yeah, so, and I don't really think anything's changed about her. I think she has just gotten, I think she's just her. Like, I think, obviously, like, if she was capable of this at, I mean, do we know how old they were?
It sounds
like. Oh my god, my favorite question.
I'm not sure we know how old, Keldo's older, right?
I think so.
Aren't they twins?
No.
Mm-hmm. No, then Keldo's older.
I think Keldo's older, but anyway, it sounds like they were teenagers, so I don't know. This is based off absolutely nothing other than my instincts, but Phasma feels like she's about 15 and Keldo feels like he's about 17.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. That's literally, I just pulled that out of my butt, but you know.
No, that yep. Sounds in the ballpark at least.
Mm-hmm. That's this podcast. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all but yeah, no, butt I talk. Mean, it's.
Yep.
No, it's yeast talk.
It's. I'm not. No. I'm just going to keep doing it. Okay.
But I feel like Phasma's lack of development is, I feel like it's intentional, and I feel like it's like it makes her unique in the Star Wars. Like this is, like, because the whole First Order is like the story of like development, right? Like it's like rises from the ashes of the Empire, and then you've got Brendel, and then Brendel wasn't savage enough, and so Armitage killed him, and like it's developed into this monstrosity, but like. Phasma is just constant. And like I feel like that makes her that to me, and we'll talk, you know, a little bit about this probably next episode, I think. This episode and next episode. But just like about her plot lines in the movie and like why she does what she does. And I feel like it does make sense because she is so constant and this is just how she's wired and she is not shaped by events, she shapes events.
Sure. And also, we keep using the term psychopath to describe her. And like, disclaimer, we're not mental health professionals. None of us study psychology. We don't, whatever. But in terms of like thinking about the classic profile of someone with that kind of mental condition, I don't know what to say, I don't know what to call it, but whatever. I mean, the thing about them is that they don't change. They're pretty single-minded. They have one goal, and this is it, man. This
yeah, exactly.
She just is.
No, yeah, exactly. And I want to say I don't use that term lightly. Mm-mm. And like I'm not throwing it out there. I mean, like by the actual definition of the word, that is what Phasma's psychological profile appears to be.
Right. I mean, the only thing she's missing is being just a smidgen more charming, but other than that, this is pretty much it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and I mean, again, we're full disclaimers about all of this stuff. We're not doctors, but
I did stay in Holiday Inn Express last night, though.
Yeah. Oh my god, fuck you, Chris.
oh my god.
But you know, sort of some of my background on this is I know like folks with these kind of like social disorders, they tend to like mimic around like what's around them mm-hmm. and like what works for them in society. So it doesn't actually surprise me that she's not like as charming as we would think like a traditional quote unquote psychopath would be like in our society. Right. Because there isn't really anybody like that in the Sire.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah, I think it's more, I mean, I'm just saying, I don't think it's discounted at all. I think she's definitely still that.
Yeah, and we know that she's a natural mimic, so I think to exactly. very much to your point, Kristen, I think that's just how it manifests instead of kind of your charming serial killer stereotype.
Right.
It's creepy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's super creepy. It's
so creepy. All right. Before we talk more about Phasma and storytelling and all of that, Chris, I know you wanted to focus a little bit on the First Order and how it compares to the Empire and
yeah.
how it diverges very, very much in certain ways.
Yeah, you really see the difference between them in this book. And because, you know, just thinking about the larger universe as a whole and what the differences between these two entities are, like, I feel like Cardinal is very built out of Imperial. He's cut from Imperial cloth. Like, his methods are a little different. His origin is a little different. But he's closer to the Imperial ideal of everything is according to his process. And like, you know, he shines his uniform. He cleans himself the exact way he was taught to clean himself, which is weird. but he's very methodical in how he views himself and how he views his charges. And Phasma is the opposite. I feel like she's methodical because it's the means to her end, but who she is as a person is just absolutely savage. And I feel like that reflects the savagery of the First Order in that, you know, we see, I think we're supposed to get the impression from the new Stormtrooper Corps and the new leadership and Kylo Ren versus Vader. And like the Empire was kind of this typical totalitarian, bureaucratic regime, whereas the First Order is just pure rage built into a governmental system.
Sure. I mean, you only have to look at Starkiller Base to know that. I mean, the Empire built not one but two Death Stars, which were capable of taking down entire planets, which was, don't get me wrong, that's really fucking bad. But the First Order decided to one-up them, take an entire fucking planet, turn it into a weapon, and then be able to take out entire planetary systems. That takes a special kind of, I don't even know, just wow.
Yeah. No, really, it's like, I feel like she is, and this is probably this is what kind of breaks Cardinal's heart. She is the First Order. He is not. He is obsolete in the system he created, essentially.
And she tells him that.
And she, does she?
With her hands.
With not English.
With her murder hands.
With the language of murder. Sorry, basic. Not with basic.
No, correct.
Yeah. And Keeks, I know you had some thoughts here too. Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
I just had a and we can talk about this maybe more on the next episode if we don't think this is the appropriate time to address it. But since you brought up Phasma, like specifically reflecting the savagery of the First Order, I kind of like jumped off of that and thought, like, do we think the story group is like trying to differentiate the Empire from the First Order by like killing off all these characters who are like kind of more Imperial in nature? Or do we think it's just like what is ending up happening, because this is kind of like, you know what I mean? I mean it's a very chicken and egg question, but like we are seeing a lot of people who are on that side and who are reasonable, like, dying. Like, discuss.
If we ever get an author on the podcast, the number one question I have for them is, how much of your story is preconceived of when you start writing, and how much is you? Because
they're gonna go ahead and not tell us that, but
yeah, no. It's interesting. Well, there was an interesting article with I think on one of the nerd sites with like several authors about this. Yeah. I think we've talked about it in the past.
Yeah, and Claudia Gray and JJM, John Jackson Miller, were two of the authors they talked to.
Yeah, and they said that they have a lot of freedom, but because Kristen, to your point, I think that the story group has stated that, like, I think it's been clear from the movies, which are like the ultimate canon, that the First Order is different and worse and more savage than the Empire. But I don't know, like, in terms of, like, specific plot points and, like, killing, like, you're going to get to this book and you're going to have killed Brendel by the end of it. I don't know. This is basically my, like, white man rephrasing of the question and saying, I don't know, but I've been talking for 5 minutes, so everybody thinks I said something smart.
I don't.
Well, Kate never thinks I said anything don't. Smart.
Oh!
Self-burn. Self-burn.
It's funny because it's true. anyway, what I was going to say, Christopher, is that So, obviously, I don't know the answer to this question, but my hunch, just as a storyteller, is that just by nature of who these new characters are that they've created who are in the First Order, and knowing that the First Order grows out of the Empire... And they're kind of just, I mean, it's 30 years after Return of the Jedi, and these people are literally kind of just aging out of the story. I think this is just kind of a natural progression for them, or unnatural if you want to get bit by a beetle and liquefied in a Bacta tank, but, you know, whatever.
Seems fine.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if they're, like, deliberately sitting there being like, we got a list of people we got to kill. Yeah, maybe they do. I think Dave Filoni does that. But,
I mean, Dave Filoni is just like, all right, whose heart am I ripping out today?
Exactly.
The answer's always Kate's.
I know, exactly.
The
answer is always Kate's.
Guys, we're recording this the day before Rebels comes back, and I'm never going to be okay again, probably. So
yeah, so this, say goodbye to Sane Kate.
Yeah.
This is probably your last episode.
Sane. That is a relative term to use for me. Anyway, but yeah, anyway, that is my suspicion.
Kate, I know you wanted to do a little bit of like preview for story stuff before we get into it in the wrap up, but we did talk a lot about unreliable narrators in previous episodes, so I know you have thoughts about those.
I always have thoughts about unreliable narrators, because people apparently don't understand that unreliable narrators are a thing, and then so they go to Pablo and be like, this doesn't match up with this. How is this both canon? And Pablo just tells them to shut up and read a book. And the Phasma kind of encourages us, honestly, to think about unreliable narrators, because, again, this, as we've said in probably every single previous episode in which we've been discussing this book has a lot to do with how we tell stories and, you know, just how stories are taken, like the storytelling as an art form, that sort of thing. So anyway, there's this bit where Vi says that she told Cardinal the truth, but she embellished it a little bit, maybe a little more than a little bit, but she knew which parts he had embellished. So I just was wondering if you thought about which parts of Phasma's story she might have made up. Obviously the small things, maybe lines of dialogue, things like that, but also, does it matter in the end that she made stuff up?
I don't think it does.
Yeah,
I don't know. Keeks, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think it matters, and I think it's, like, one of those things that's difficult to even, you know, kick around and hypothesize on, because there's, like, no way for us to know whether or not we're right.
Sure.
But, and, like, from the way that she told the story, or from the way that she narrated the story to Cardinal, however we want to say it, there weren't any parts that sounded particularly different from any other parts. You know what I mean? There weren't any, mm-hmm. like, there was no indication that Dawson wanted us to, like, know
yeah.
what may have been true and what maybe was not true. I don't think there were a ton of breadcrumbs dropped, maybe with the exception of Vi saying that she's basically a subcontractor for the Resistance.
Yes.
Which Chris disagreed with me and Kate on, and I think, like, the first episode where we talked about this.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Chris, did you have, like, any textual evidence for that?
Yeah.
No, just kind of the concept of being...
Not to be a dick.
No. That's fair. I mean, just kind of the concept of being a subcontractor of an unsanctioned resistance movement is odd to me.
She explains it, though. That I mean, I see where you're coming from, but I literally don't know how you got this idea in your head, so I'm just fascinated by
it. That she's actually just part of the Resistance?
No, because, I mean, there are people who go around, like, selling services, including people like her who are a step short of being bounty hunters. And
yeah, so she's, like, essentially a bounty hunter
spy. With morals.
Yeah.
So okay. I don't see why that's so strange a concept in the Star Wars galaxy.
No, yeah.
It's not. I mean, we had Han, right? That's how we first met Han, was just services rendered.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. Fair. I'll withdraw it.
I mean, Han didn't even have morals. I mean,
you don't have to, you don't, Han wanted you don't to withdraw it. We just, I was just wondering if you, if like, I missed something, but I didn't see that. I thought that she was totally telling the truth. Because I thought that if she was really like gung-ho resistance, we would have seen it a little bit more in like the parts that were not between her and Cardinal. And I think that's where I'm like, I don't think that she's like full on resistance, but.
No, I don't think so either.
I mean, I get like Leia being pretty casual with her, but I think that just means that they've done a lot of work together before.
Right. I mean, yeah. You trust people that if you, especially in these situations where it's literally life and death, like go for a milk run to see if the First Order's in this like random pocket of the galaxy, like, yeah, this makes sense.
Yeah.
Fair. I'll allow it. Withdrawn.
Oh, you'll allow it? Thanks for your permission, Chris. Anyway,
you're so welcome.
Moving right along. I'm so cranky today.
Along those same lines, I think we wanted to get into like, or Kate wanted to lead us through the discussion basically on like storytelling and legend and canon and Star Wars, the hotly debated topics those are.
Yep. So this is everyone's favorite part where I get to super hardcore nerd out. So this facet of the book was really, really interesting to me because, again, we're playing with ideas about how storytelling works. And I've said in previous episodes that there are so many layers in between us and how we're being told Phasma's story that it really does feel like legend. Like, Phasma's story is filtered through Siv, who is filtered through Vi. And then sometimes we, like, have extra commentary from Cardinal when he's like sitting around and like percolating on what he's heard, sort of thing. And so the question becomes, you know, again, like we were discussing a little bit with the previous point, what is embellishment and what is truth, and where do those lines sort of begin to blur? And what this really reminded me of, I've mentioned this book on the podcast before, is Tim O'Brien's The Things We Carried. There's a short story in that book that's called How to Tell a True War Story, which I did my undergraduate thesis on because I am a giant fucking nerd. But what it's the point of it is that he's trying to tell, the character in that story is trying to talk about how his friend died in the Vietnam War, and he tells it several different ways, and each time like a detail is different, or you know, something is different about the way this guy dies. And the narrator's point is that is it really true if you're just telling the facts but the person doesn't understand what it was like to be there, or is it more true if you, again, if you embellish things but that it captures, you know, the truth of the thing like as it felt. It's one of those questions, which I think is really interesting here. And then, especially for Cardinal, because after listening to Vi's story, which really hits home emotionally for him, and that was intentional on Vi's part, he just stops respecting Phasma. Like, she used to be like a murder coworker who he respected, but now he has no respect for her at all. And he says that Phasma is an empty fiction, a legend built on lies. But also, if he's calling her a legend, like all legends are lies in some way, because again, they're all filtered through these things, and the truth gets all stretched out, and it gets all funny and weird. So anyway, I just wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, and like, I feel like the term legend is like almost loaded in Star Wars lore at this point, because we have the book that's literally entitled Legends of Luke Skywalker, and like, just, I don't know, how do you all think that kind of the creation of Phasma as a legend and a vehicle for propaganda compares to old, you know, stories of the Jedi or stories about Luke Skywalker as a hero?
I think we get this interesting kind of new trilogy perspective on that, where I mean, you said specifically like the Jedi and Luke, and I think that was obviously dived into more. I don't know what the tense of that word is supposed to be.
Diving into. We're going to say that.
Sure.
No, I'm kidding. That's totally wrong, but I don't care.
No, I know. That's wrong.
It sounds right, though. It sounds more right than any of the other options.
All of them sound wrong. I hate words like that. They obviously got into that more in The Last Jedi than they did in The Force Awakens. But, I mean, like, the first thing that comes up, like, is top of mind for me about that question is, you know, like, Han Solo the war hero, no, the smuggler. And it's like, you know, it all depends on from where you're sitting and what stories you've heard and what people have focused on and things like that. And I mean, I think it just shows that there can be so many different facets to things that we don't get to see, especially that we don't get to witness firsthand. I mean, the Han one is funny because we know the whole backstory, right? But there's all kinds of shit about Luke that they're still kind of filling in with the comics and stuff that is interesting. And I don't know, Chris probably has more to say about this than I do.
I mean, what's interesting to me is that much like in real life, the legends in Star Wars, every legend has an ounce of truth in it. You know, Han Solo was a war hero. He was also a smuggler. Phasma is billed as this super strong, you know, perfect soldier who is a survivor, and she is. It's just no one before knew the facets of that. You know, she was super mysterious, and she is. So it's making it, the book's definitely making a statement about all of that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree, and I mean, I think it kind of goes back to, you know, what is canon in a story of that happened a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away? Like, you know, like, what is real and does real matter very much to what you were saying? So, like, Phasma is an empty fiction, but Phasma is also Phasma, and that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what she is in reality. It matters how she's remembered, because at the end of the day, these are all stories that are being relayed to us. And I feel like that's very much the same as Luke. Like, when he became a legend because he saved Darth Vader, as he's talking, like, you know, how he talks to Rey in The Last Jedi. But, you know, it doesn't matter what he is in reality, because he is remembered as a hero. And, you know, if you see yourself put in a place where the canon, so to speak, interferes with reality, then you deal with that when it comes, but for the most part, it doesn't matter.
So I think we mentioned this last episode 39, that Dawson said that by the end of this book we would understand why Phasma took the shields down at Starkiller Base, and I think Kate wanted to dive into that and whether or not we think that happened and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to talk about whether we think that Dawson accomplished her goal, and if she did, we should be able to formulate that into a sentence. This is why Phasma did this. And Chris, I think it was you last time who you were saying she'll change her allegiance to any clan that appears to be stronger than her, because her entire MO is to survive. And she knew at that point that Finn wasn't a killer, but also he had the upper hand on her, and that if they were able to infiltrate Starkiller Base, then they were probably able to, like, fuck some shit up in there, and probably, if not, you know, make it explode, then just, like, disable it or something. So she was just like, well, better take down these shields, because then at least I'll be alive, and this kid's sure not gonna kill me. I saw him at the village on Jakku. He can't shoot anybody. So, yeah, in that way, sure, she did accomplish her goal. The author, that is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one, kind of to your point, Kate, about just distilling it down to one line, where it really hit home for me is when Phasma's in the factory on Parnassus when she goes back later and is creating her armor. And when she goes into the factory and she sees all the people who killed themselves because they, you know, knew that Constar Mining was not coming back for them. And she just, like, is filled with such resentment for them and talking about how they're so weak. And she says something which really struck me as, I think, the reason. She says, she follows people too and needs leadership too, but she won't drink poison for any master. And that, to me, is what it is. Like, she can have masters. She has no problem with taking orders from people, whether it's the Sire and Keldo when it, you know, served her purpose, whether it's Brendel when it served her purpose, whether it's the First Order. But she will not sacrifice herself for a group or for a cause. Her number one priority is to her. And to me, that holds through Starkiller Base. She was like, all right, here's the situation I'm in. My life is being threatened. And at the end of the day, I'm not, like, I'm with the First Order because they are powerful. I'm not with them because I am loyal to their ideals. And so I am going to save myself and deal with the consequences later.
Honestly, it didn't seem like there were a lot of consequences. She seemed
pretty... Well, exactly. That's the point.
Yeah, she seemed pretty fucking okay in TLJ.
Yeah, I mean, I just wrote on the outline, she does whatever the fuck she wants. So, like, I think, I mean, that Chris hit the nail on the head where, like, she has no issues taking orders. But also, I think just, like, self-preservation is always going to be the number one thing for her. I mean, and I think it was in the whole book. I mean, everything that she did, you know, we sort of get the picture that she thinks that's what she needs to do in order to get back to the ship and get the fuck off Parnassos. It all seems very self-preservation to me.
Yep.
Definitely.
And that's kind of it, honestly. That is the entire point of Phasma.
Yeah.
The book and the person.
Yeah, basically, to just, like, the entire point of the book and the person and this very short episode is to see that. And with that, that's all we had to talk about today. We are going to continue talking about Phasma in our wrap-up next episode. And for those who missed it, our next book is going to be Aftermath by Chuck Wendig. So you still have time to hit up your library and pick that up and read along with us. In the meantime, don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, at BookWarsPod. Email us at bookwarspod@gmail.com, and you can also find us via Tashi Station Radio. And rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, both to us and to the Tashi Station Radio mega feed. It's the best way for people to discover the show. We are still looking to get some more reviews and ratings to just help people, you know, who are interested in Star Wars and the larger universe, get into the podcast and get into the extended canon. And finally, if you like the show and you enjoy listening to it, donate to the Tashi Station Radio Patreon. It helps cover our hosting and production costs here at Book Wars Pod. It helps cover the costs for the other amazing podcasts you can find under the Tashi Station Radio banner. And it is very helpful to us. So if you can't, then no worries. This is still free content. If you can, then even better. And we would love to have you donate even $1 a month. And that is it for this episode. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Butera Design. For Kate and Kristen, thank you for listening to the Book Wars Pod. I'm Chris, and we will all talk to you again when we wrap up Phasma next week. Sometimes he's right. Sometimes he's an asshole. Let's not include that.